Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Mystery Babylon News Radio on November 25th, 2013. Tonight's broadcast is a replay of Tom Fress's Inquisition update on November 25th, 2013. I heard this morning and this is something that I wanted to share. It's a message of vital importance when it comes to understanding the founding of America and the American Revolution and the three Carols, Charles Carroll, John Carroll, and Daniel Carroll. Tom ties this in with R.W. Thompson, and I think you'll find it very, very interesting. Thanks for tuning in. And here's Tom.
It says, they are today, speaking of the Jesuits, they are today, as at every hour since the time of Ignatius Loyola, the founder of the Jesuit order, compactly united to destroy, as sinful and heretical, all civil institutions constructed by the people for their own protection, and substitute for them such as are obedient to monarchs and their own interpretation of the divine law. And now, when the pontifical authority, that is the papacy, is vested in a pope, that's Pope Leo XIII, whose youthful mind was impressed with and disciplined by Jesuit teachings, and they stand ready to subvert every government which has separated the state from the church and secured the freedom of conscience, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and are straining every nerve to obtain the control of our system of common school education so as to instill their doctrines, their Jesuit doctrines, their popish doctrines into the minds of the American youth. The times have become such that all the citizens of the United States, irrespective of their forms of religious belief, should form a solid and united body in resisting their un-American plottings. That's the warning from R.W. Thompson. And what do we see in direct contradiction to this warning? Vatican Council II and ecumenism. The union of the Protestants with the Roman Catholic Church. And the result of that is a union of church and state now that they have a political mandate in the country. We're going the way of Rome. We've failed to understand the wisdom of R.W. Thompson. We've failed to read this book that has been purposefully removed from the shelves of libraries and particularly in the schools and the Protestant churches in this country. Wise words from R.W. Thompson and so many of the other authors that we read here on Inquisition Update, proving the error of our ways, proving the ecumenical errors of our ways, and what we need now is a return to Protestantism if we hope to save this republic. Now, R.W. Thompson is going to now make some statements about Charles Carroll of Carrollton, Maryland, one of the signers of our Declaration of Independence. Now, I take issue occasionally with R.W. Thompson because my research contradicts some of his statements. And nowhere more so than his statements, brief as though they may be, some of his statements about Charles Carroll. Now, I've read some of the history of Charles Carroll and the entire Carroll family in this country, and I've even read some of the history of the Carroll family before they were ever imported to this country. Yes, indeed, they were imported to the to the United States in the colonial period, and prior to their immigration to this country, they were warriors in Ireland. Originally, the Carroll family came from Europe, and the papacy transplanted them into Ireland to help conquer Ireland for the papacy. And they served the same role in the United States of America, but they changed their tactics. instead of being warriors to conquer the quote-unquote heretics, they were, well, let us just say, more subtle in their establishment of Roman Catholicism. And if you were a listener during the period of time when we read The Ark and the Dove by J. Moss Ives, you understand what role the Carroll family played. Now, they're championed in this country as having promoted the anti-Roman Catholic tenet of religious liberty, freedom of conscience, and such like. But it is also apparent in that book that the Carroll family made these concessions simply as a way to preserve Roman Catholicism and to give it religious liberty in this country where it had been denied in England. And the intent of the Carroll family was to make these temporary concessions so that Roman Catholicism could have an ample opportunity to grow in strength and to eventually get control of the government. As a matter of fact, Carroll was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. I believe it was Daniel Carroll who donated the land for what is now known as the Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. And John Carroll, a Jesuit priest who operated in the Maryland colony during their suppression, the suppression of the Jesuit order, eventually became the first bishop of the United States of America. The Carroll family play a huge role in the formation of our federal government, and it behooves every one of my listeners to do their own independent research into the history of the Carroll family, particularly focusing on Charles Carroll of Carrollton, Daniel Carroll, and Jesuit John Carroll. Now, first of all the Carroll boys received Jesuit educations. Yes, John Carroll was indeed a Jesuit priest. But to say that Charles Carroll of Carrollton and Daniel Carroll were not Jesuits defies history. They all received Jesuit educations. Therefore, they were instructed from their youth that the papacy is the replacement of the Son of God on earth, that he speaks with the voice of God, that he is infallible and has a divine right to rule the world unopposed and irresponsible to the laws of the governments of the world, and he is untouchable. Now, this has to be understood in order to comprehend the errors of what R.W. Thompson is about to say about the Carroll family. Now, he says, Charles Carroll of Carrollton, who signed our Declaration of Independence, was a Roman Catholic, but not a Jesuit. Now, technically here, R.W. Thompson is correct. He did not take an oath, as far as we know, as far as my research has shown, did not take the oath of a Jesuit. He was not a Jesuit priest. But certainly, just as Pope Leo XIII did, he received a Jesuit education. And Jesuitism controlled his mind and everything that he did. Same with Daniel Carroll. Now, speaking of Charles Carroll, he says he loved his church, which no one would deny, and adhered to its faith, which did not then require him to believe that its pope was infallible. Now, before I even continue, at that time it was not a dogma of the church. In other words, not a written tenet of Roman Catholic canon law that the pope was infallible. Remember, Vatican Council I, where that was made a formal dogma of the Roman Catholic Church, didn't occur till 1870. But you can bet your bippy, being Jesuit trained, he most emphatically observed the papacy as infallible. And he was simply serving the papacy in his role in the colonial period in Maryland. It says, Charles Carroll of Carrollton, who signed the Declaration of Independence, was a Roman Catholic, but not a Jesuit. Wrong. We may think of him as a Jesuit, even though he did not wear the cloak. Now, he loved his church and adhered to its faith, which did not then require him to believe that its pope was infallible. Listen, if you understand the history of Charles Carroll and the Carroll family, you must understand that they would never have been given the role that they played in the United States in behalf of the Roman Catholic Church and the papacy were they not completely sold out to the dogma of papal infallibility. They simply would not have been chosen by the papacy to found the Maryland colony, nor had any role whatsoever in the formation of our government. And says, and with his mind filled with patriotic emotions, let me tell you, the only patriotism that the Carroll family had was to make sure that what became of the colonies, the eventual United States of America, could be brought to its knees in service to the papacy. Okay? Call him a patriot if you want, but he was patriotic first and foremost to the papacy. It says, and with his mind filled with patriotic emotions, he stood by the side of Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin and 54 other patriots and united with them in separating church and state, in establishing a government of the people, in guaranteeing the absolute freedom of religious belief. Now, I want to ask my listeners, those of you who pay attention and do your own research, when ever in Roman Catholic history did any Roman Catholic ascribe to religious liberty? It's always been a law of their church that the Roman Catholic Church is the one holy Roman Catholic and apostolic church outside of which there is no salvation, and every other religion, every other church is heresy, and that it is also a proper service to God to exterminate heretics. You talk about religious intolerance? No religious system in the world has ever demonstrated more religious intolerance than the Roman Catholic Church. Crusade after crusade against non-Catholic nations and peoples, inquisitions after inquisition against God-fearing, Bible-believing Christians who would never bow to the Pope, the biblical, historical, and prophetic Antichrist. But she's drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus, and she's never repudiated any of it, never apologized for any of it, said it was a meritorious work and that it was her divine right and prerogative on the earth to extirpate and annihilate heresy. When in all of Roman Catholic history was religious tolerance ever spoken of in anything but condemnatory terms? Not once. So we have to see the Carroll role in establishing religious liberty in this country to be a lie on its face. Okay? It simply defies the facts of history. No credible mind could accept this idea that religious liberty is a tenet of the Roman Catholic Church. And yet we see Charles Carroll united with people like Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin, a deist and a Luciferian Freemason, and 54 other so-called patriots, most of which were Freemasons themselves, Lucifer-worshipping Freemasons, and giving us a government separating church and state. Now, you can only come to one conclusion. That separation of church and state, in other words, allowing religious liberty in this country was only an attempt to destroy Protestantism. Only an attempt to let other religious faiths operate without restraint, with complete and total freedom, so that they could eventually destroy Protestantism in this country, and then return to religious intolerance. And that's exactly what we're seeing in the United States and the world today. They joined with Freemasons. Now, people are going to ask if you've never heard before. Freemasonry, ultimately, is simply a wing of the Jesuit order. Remember during their suppression in 1773? They were reduced to fugitive status in Europe because of Pope Clement XIV's suppression and abolition of the order by the papal bull. So they had to go underground. And those who've done their research find that the Jesuits went underground in this so-called Illuminati, which was created by a professor of Roman Catholic canon law, Adam Weishaupt. And though it was exposed and condemned as a nefarious secret society, the Jesuits simply co-opted Freemasonry. And this was all taking place during the suppression of the Jesuit order in 1773. So Freemasonry has literally become a cover for Jesuitism. And one of the methods used by the Jesuits to overthrow Protestantism in this country is to make sure that there was religious liberty in this country, so opposition to Protestantism, Bible-believing Protestantism, could be raised right here in the United States of America for the eventual overthrow of Protestantism and all Protestant tenets in the civil government and in the churches. You see what's happening in Washington, D.C. as evidence of this assertion, and you see in the churches the ecumenical movement as evidence of this assertion, and it cannot be argued. Now, Charles Carroll was, for all intents and purposes, a dyed-in-the-wool papist allied with Freemasons, Jesuits, Jesuit-educated, and was simply trying, at a period of time when Roman Catholicism, Roman Catholics were in an extreme minority, to prepare for their eventual control of this country. Now, R.W. Thompson obviously doesn't comprehend this, and that's why he says some of these things about the Carroll family. And I wish I could talk to him today. But it's no excuse for us to be ignorant of the facts. Now, again, he says he loved his church and adhered to its faith, which did not then require him to believe that its pope was infallible. And with his mind filled with patriotic emotions, he stood by the side of Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and 54 other patriots, and united with them in separating church and state, in establishing a government of the people, in guaranteeing the absolute freedom of religious belief. And when he and they looked upon the great work they had accomplished, they solemnly declared that it was in obedience to, quote, the laws of nature and of nature's God, unquote. He who now insists, as Jesuits do, that in all this he violated his Christian conscience, and I would say his Roman Catholic conscience, by offending God in the perpetration of an act of heresy, because in the Roman Catholic Church it is an act of heresy to defend religious liberty, not only aspers unjustly the memory of this unselfish patriot, but wounds the sensibilities of every true American heart. So, poor R.W. Thompson views Charles Carroll as a patriot. I view him as a dyed-in-the-wool papist hidden under a cloak of religious liberty, which is absurd. Now, even the Jesuits, as R.W. Thompson relates, would denounce or did denounce Charles Carroll as a heretic for embracing religious liberty. The Jesuits now laud the Carroll family for having provided us our entire form of government. Let me tell you what this is all leading to. This claim that the Roman Catholic Church is most responsible, that this Carroll family is most responsible for our institutions in this country, laughingly called religious liberty, and our Constitution, a Bill of Rights, and Declaration of Independence, so much importance during the founding of our country. Here's what's really behind it all. Since the Roman Catholic Church had so much to do with the formation of our government, they have the right to change it. And that's what they're doing. They're doing exactly what we asserted when we read the book, The Ark and the Dove. They made these temporary concessions of religious liberty, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and on and on and on to appease the Protestants, to gain them time, to gain the Roman Catholic Church time, to build its strength until such time as it could overthrow their government and change their government. Look, if you create something, you have the right to change it, don't you? Or destroy it? That's exactly what they're doing. The Roman Catholic Church made no concessions to religious liberty. They've never repudiated their hatred for religious liberty. Only the American Roman Catholic Church. Now, somebody's got to scratch their head and say, why this contradiction? Why has it been tolerated by the Vatican so long in the United States? For all intents and purposes, the American Roman Catholic Church is apostate, heretical, in the view of the papacy. And this heresy forms the basis of what we're now seeing today, which was literally their intent from the very beginning. We need to return to a Protestant understanding of history. We need to return to an understanding of the history of the Roman Catholic Church and of the Protestant Church. An understanding of the history of the Jesuits and the Counter-Reformation. And if we don't gather up that understanding, an understanding which is virtually lost in our generation, this country will be overthrown and no one will ever know who upon whom to put the blame. Current events are simply an extension of history. To understand, now continuing where we left off before the break, it says, at the time of our independence, Pope Pius VI was Pope. He had not yet been declared to be infallible, and the Jesuits did not exist as an order under the protection of the church. Now, don't make too much of this. The papacy has always argued that it was infallible, being the replacement of the Son of God on earth. It was endued with divine right and divine power. The papacy has always been the man of sin, the son of perdition. Okay, though it was not an official dogma of the Roman Catholic Church, we must not concede that the popes viewed themselves as fallible. They viewed themselves as infallible, and it was a contention always among the papacy and the councils, between the papacy and the people. But the Carroll family understood that the papacy was infallible, whether it was an official dogma of the church or not. And the Jesuits have always embraced the infallibility of the Pope. They have been the promoters of the so-called dogma of the infallibility of the Pope. It was the Jesuits who called the First Vatican Council in 1870 into session for that very purpose, to declare the official dogma of papal infallibility. And never mind the fact that the Jesuits were suppressed by a papal bull. They did not stop their operations in the world. They just sought underground cover so that they could continue their operations clandestinely in spite of all the opposition in Europe to their existence, which eventually resulted in their suppression and abolition. The Jesuits will never stop their attempt to conquer Protestantism and to elevate their choice to a position of sovereignty and uncontested rule. It's a global monarchy that they have sought ever since their founding to establish in the world, a global monarchy. And they've used the papacy as that monarch. Now, had he not been declared to be infallible, and the Jesuits did not exist as a society under the protection of the Church, for they had been suppressed for their innumerable offenses against the Church and the nations by his immediate predecessor, Pope Clement XIV, and were wanderers over the earth seeking shelter under heretical princes and states. We've talked about them finding refuge in the Illuminati in Bavaria, which is still a seat of Jesuit intrigue in the world. We saw them finding refuge under Catherine the Great of Russia, and what is never spoken of, the refuge that the Jesuits found in Freemasonry in the colonial period. And one or two or three Jesuits were even spoken of as occupying seats upon the Ark and the Dove to come to this country. And John Carroll, who was the founder of Georgetown University and the first bishop of the United States of the American Roman Catholic Church in Maryland. I insist that all of the suppression of the Jesuits and all was simply a cover for their main operation in the world, that is the founding of our federal government. That's what appears to me from my research to be the fact. It was all cover for their clandestine operations here in the colonies. And it was done through the Carroll family. And here R.W. Thompson is lauding the Carroll family as patriots when they were papists. Okay? He says he had not been declared to be infallible, this Pope Pius VI, at least not officially, but you understand that he was regarded as infallible by papists. And the Jesuits did not exist as a society under the protection of the Church. No, they were operating clandestinely all over the world, and nowhere more so right here than in the colonies. And it says, for they had been suppressed for their innumerable offenses against the Roman Catholic Church and the nations by his immediate predecessor, Clement XIV, and were wanderers over the earth seeking shelter under heretical princes and states, where they were allowed to plot against the Church, so they say. Now the Pope, therefore, possessing only spiritual jurisdiction at this time, remember his temporal power had been thrown off by even the Roman Catholic states of Europe, they establishing their republican forms of government and electing their own kings, completely putting the Pope out to pasture, as I like to say, he was nothing but a spiritual leader. And he shouldn't even have been that, and he wasn't that in the Protestant nations. They all regarded him as Antichrist. So the papacy is convulsing in its last twitches before rigor mortis sets in, basically. The papacy had received what appeared for all intents and purposes as being a mortal wound. All right? The Pope, therefore, possessing only spiritual jurisdiction, did not pronounce a pontifical curse upon our infant institutions, not only because they were not within that jurisdiction, says R.W. Thompson, but because they secured, by proper guarantees, the freedom of religious belief to Roman Catholics. Now look, R.W. Thompson says, at that time, the papacy was not hurling any anathemas against the United States because his temporal power had been removed. But we must understand that it was the papacy who launched Christopher Columbus on his expedition to discover the quote-unquote New World. The papacy laid its claim by establishing its flag on this hemisphere long before these revolutionary activities took place in the United States. And Rome has claimed jurisdiction over the whole world ever since its establishment. That was the purpose of the pseudo-Isidorian decretals and the donation of Constantine. That he asserted all the territory assigned to it by Caesar in the old Roman Empire, making him a king of kings. The donation of Constantine establishes his king of kings status. And because the Pope, or because the Caesars arrogated to themselves the prerogatives of God, the Pope also did likewise. And declaring himself to be Lord of Lords, Bishop of Bishop. Now, while it appears that this new world, at least what is now known as the United States of America, was in the beginning primarily a Protestant, and that Catholics only made up less than 1% of the population, that somehow the Pope was at a disadvantage. Not from the Pope's point of view. This was his. The papacy declares that the earth is mine and the fullness thereof. And so they have fought to establish complete control of this country from the very founding of the United States. He says, the Pope, therefore, possessing only spiritual jurisdiction, did not pronounce a pontifical curse upon our infant institutions. You must understand the papacy has always seen Protestant institutions as heretical. The only problem for the Pope at this time is he was an extreme minority in the colonies, and they had to be very circumspect in their dealings, or they would have been extirpated. He says not only because they were not within that jurisdiction, but because they secured, by proper guarantees, the freedom of religious belief to Catholics. Look, this is what the greatest achievement of the revolutionary period was, to establish religious liberty for Catholics. They did not have such religious liberties in England at the time of the formation of our republic. The Jesuits were kicked out of England. They were seen as treasonous because they tried to overthrow the crown of Britain and to put England back under the sovereign rule of the papacy. And because of so many civil wars incited by the papacy in England, they virtually outlawed Roman Catholicism. The Mass was illegal. They saw Roman Catholicism for the tyranny that it is. And say what you might about the Church of England, and I have much to say about the Church of England. I consider it just to be Protestant on its face, while it indeed serves the papacy. It did resist the papacy and the Jesuits, and made the practice of Roman Catholicism illegal. There was no such thing as religious liberty in England. And so they sought religious liberty in this country, and the only way to achieve it was to grant it to others. But now, having established itself firmly in control of the government, all bets are off. No more religious liberty. The country is being made Roman Catholic. Now it says he had his hands full in attempting to deal with the French Revolution, that is, the Pope, Pope Pius VI. over which he supposed his jurisdiction to extend, because France had, for several centuries, recognized the spiritual dominion of his predecessors and their right to regulate its faith. Consequently, he took the side of Louis XVI against the people of France and denounced the Legislative Assembly and avowed his purpose to maintain all the prerogative rights of the quote-unquote Holy See. He accordingly issued an encyclical proclamation in which he condemned the efforts of the French people to establish their own republic, and the Legislative Assembly also, in these words, quote, "That assembly, after abolishing monarchy," a monarchy being that favored choice of government because the Pope sees himself as a monarch and the kings of the earth over which he rules are monarchs, he says, "which is the most natural form of government," had attributed almost all power to the populace, that is, to the people, who follow no wisdom and no counsel and have no understanding of things, unquote. Now, if that's what the papacy said about the French, seeking to throw off the temporal power of the Pope and establish their own government, make their own laws, declare themselves independent of the kingly status of the Pope, what do you think he would say about the Americans? The colonists. What do you think, he would say about the Carroll family, who was promoting religious liberty in the colonies? He says he further instructed the bishops that all, quote, poisoned books, unquote, should be removed, quote, from the hands of the faithful by force and by stratagem, unquote. He declared that, quote, the priesthood and tyranny support each other, and the one overthrown, the other cannot long subsist, unquote. So he's condemning even the Roman Catholic clergy for siding with this struggle for independence of the people in France. What do you think he would have said of Charles Carroll? Never forget. Charles Carroll was a favored son of the Roman Catholic Church. Charles Carroll and the entire history of the Carroll family in Ireland and their entire history on the mainland of Europe before that were that they were warriors for the Pope, conquering nation after nation to be subservient to the papacy. Are we to believe that Charles Carroll had any other endeavor here in the colonies, despite his demand for religious liberty to be observed, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and all of our so-called Protestant tenets? Not even a possibility in my view. He said he declared, quote, that the priesthood and tyranny support each other, and the one overthrown, the other could not long subsist, unquote. He denounced the liberty after which France was striving, in imitation of our revolutionary example, as tending to, quote, corrupt minds, pervert morals, and overthrow all order in affairs and laws, unquote. And the equality of man as leading to anarchy. Now, what is he referring to here? In Roman Catholicism, there is no equality of man. That the average man is a dolt and is destined by divine providence to be led. And that God has also created another race of human beings that are created by him to lead, and that is the papacy and the Roman Catholic hierarchy and the kings over which he rules. Two classes of people, the ruling class and the slaves. Roman Catholicism does not teach in the equality of man. And he says, as this notion of equality of man is leading to anarchy and the speedy dissolution of society. Why does it lead to anarchy? Well, the people simply don't need the Pope to lead them anymore. Nor do they need his kings to lead them anymore. The Protestant Reformation gave them wisdom from on high. They had a king, and they had a law that was written upon their hearts. It was a righteous kingdom, the kingdom of Christ, an invisible kingdom that was manifest in all of its people. No longer was the Roman Catholic hierarchy a necessity. Rather, it was relegated to the man of sin, the son of perdition. That's what fueled the whole Protestant Reformation. The papacy calls this anarchy, and why would he not? The man of sin, the son of perdition, who believes he has the divine right to rule every man, woman, and child in spiritual things and in temporal things, as a global monarch who sees anybody who asserts their own Christianity as anarchists. That's how we're viewed. That's how the American Roman Catholic Church has been viewed by the papacy, and now the papacy is trying to assert itself in its old world order role. King of kings and Lord of lords. The papacy believes that all the ills of the world are a result of the Protestant Reformation. And that's why the Jesuits have targeted the Protestant Reformation. R.W. Thompson concludes the chapter by saying, and inasmuch as this Pope, Pope Pius VI, and the present Pope, Pope Leo XIII, have been solemnly decreed to be infallible, incapable of error in matters of faith, and standing in the place of God upon the earth, and Leo XIII has never repudiated these teachings of Pope Pius VI or many others by other popes, and the decree of infallibility has so enlarged his spiritual jurisdiction as to bring all political religious matters throughout the world within its circle, and the Jesuits have been reestablished under their original constitution as it came from the very hands of Ignatius Loyola, and are still full of life and vigor, which they constantly display in their tireless efforts to control the education of American youth. The obligation imposed upon all our people of every religious creed to discover in what direction we are drifting is positive, absolute, and indispensable. R.W. Thompson is once again making a plea to every American, irrespective of his religious faith, to resist papal tyranny, to resist Jesuitism, to strengthen our freedom and independence, religious liberty, freedom of the press, freedom of conscience, freedom of speech, or else return to the old world order. And I don't know how many times it can be stated on Inquisition Update without being redundant. And boring, but listen, there are some people to whom God has awakened their minds and hearts and who are beginning to see what R.W. Thompson is asserting and are beginning to act upon it. It's a small beginning. But it's the kingdom of Christ. I don't want to go to my grave having not resisted the man of sin, the son of perdition, the biblical, historical, and prophetic Antichrist. Being indifferent about this new world order is spiritual suicide in my book. And I would think after reading so much of R.W. Thompson, it must have been spiritual suicide in his book, too.
I got a poor start in life, heading downhill real fast. Can't see the future, ain't recalling the past. I'm not